This is Martha Carswell. I'm interviewing Mrs. Ruth Poland at her home in Diboll, Texas. The date is July the 13th, 1985. Mrs. Poland, would you tell about your early childhood?
I was born near Burke, Texas, October the 3rd, 1913. I was the youngest of three children. My brother was the eldest, and he took care of my sister and me while my mother and father worked in the fields, as my father was a farmer. We usually spent the time on a pallet in the fields. At the age of three, we moved to the small community of Prairie Grove, where my father was a sharecropper. My brother trapped wild animals for their furs and sold them through the mail. He was happy when he caught a mink or an otter because he could get a good price for them.
Did your father work other than farming?
Yes, when he was finished in the with the crops, he found small jobs on the roads and sometimes at the sawmill to supplement our income.
Did your brother make much money from his furs?
Well, yes, it was much money at that time. Of course, it didn't amount to that much now. He got good prices for his furs, but he had to know how to really cure them and stretch them. And he had a book that he read about how to put them on a frame, a wooden frame, and stretch them so they'd dry. And sometimes some types of animal skins he nailed to the barn, stretched them out and nailed them to the barn so they would dry.
Describe the first school you attended.
Well, Prairie Grove was the first school I attended. And we went to school in a one-room church building. There was one teacher for all grades, 1 through 8. We sat on long wooden benches that were used for church pews. We had outdoor restrooms, and we had to bring our lunch from home. And we didn't have any way to wash our hands. I remember quite well the cemetery was nearby. And when there was a funeral, the teacher would have us line up and march to the funeral. We didn't like to do this. There were no supplies at this little school, and few books, no library books at all. We had to share our books so that we'd pass them around so that everyone could take a book home at night.
How did the teacher teach that many classes?
Well, that was a task, I'm sure. Our day began with him calling the first grade to a long bench at the front where they began their reading lessons and their spelling lessons. In a short time, this group was dismissed, and he would call the next class. And they would go through their lessons as best they could. And that's the way our day went. But how he got help was that the older students who already could read and could spell and do math would help the younger ones. And so it wasn't all the teacher's job. He really had some help.
Mrs. Pulling, would you describe your life on the farm?
Yes. When I was nine years old, my father bought a 90-acre farm 3 miles east of Diboll. Our life on the farm was hard. We all helped to plant and to cultivate and to harvest the crops, which were cotton and corn and peanuts and potatoes. My sister and I had to do the laundry, which was done by using a rub board, a tub, and a boiling pot. Homemade lye soap was used to clean the clothes. My sister and I also had to do the milking of the cows, sometimes as many as seven. She often said that her boyfriend had to wait until she finished milking. Our Saturdays were filled with ironing and cleaning the yards. Then, when it turned real cold in the winter, we would have a hog butchering days. My father would kill as many as 8 hogs, cut up the meat, stuff the sausage, and hang it in a smokehouse to be cured by hickory smoke. We had no car, so we went in a wagon drawn by mules. I remember how thrilled I was to ride on the wagon filled with cotton that we'd picked and go to Burke to the cotton gin. We always ate dinner at Miss Anna McCall's general store. For fun on the farm, we had what we called play parties. And at these play parties, we would dance to our singing games. This was very similar to the square dancing of today. Also, we had candy drawings where stick candy with various colored stripes was put in a great big box. And everyone drew a stick of candy. And those getting a stick that matched were partners for the evening. And they won an extra stick of candy. Then, when all of our chores were finished, such as gathering the crops and so forth, my father would load up the wagon with supplies for our fishing camp out. Neighbors would go also, and we children had fun playing games.
How do you make lasso?
Oh, this is something that my mother was very good at. You had to have the big iron pot and build a fire under the pot. And then you would fill the pot with cut up fat, hog fat, or it could be beef fat, or beef suet. And then she would put some water with this and kind of stir it up. And then a can or two of lye, according to how much of the fat you had. And then she would have to stir and stir and stir for an hour or so. And then, of course, you would just leave it overnight and let it cool. And it would be hard blocks that you cut from your pot. And then you put this in buckets or wrapped it with paper and kept it for the whole year.
My aunt had a smokehouse, and I've always wondered how you could have a fire inside a house.
Well, you know, the smokehouse had a dirt floor, and so my father would build up a little mound in the middle of the smokehouse and kind of well it out and make a hole in the mound. And there he would put his hickory chips and small twigs and there and begin his fire. There was no blaze after a while because he would kind of smother it out. You had to smother it so you'd have smoke. Now, this would this smoking would go on day and night, so there was no danger of it getting a fire started because it was in the dirt and it was smoldering with smoke. Now, the smokehouse was vented so that you could see the smoke at any time you passed when we were curing the meat.
Tell about the dive ball schools you attended.
I started the school in dive ball in the third grade. Our desks were nailed down, so we couldn't move around. There were few supplies, and even the textbooks were scarce. There were no bulletin boards, and the schoolroom was very dull. We walked to school since there was no buses, and we had outdoor restrooms and no lunchroom. There was not any organized PE program, so we played tag and dropped the handkerchief most of the time. My most pleasant memory of dive ball elementary was the weekly assembly where we gathered and sang patriotic songs. My most vivid memory is when our teacher, Mr. Davis, broke his leg. He jumped out the window chasing an older boy who had misbehaved. We were all screaming. In Dive Ball High School, there was a small enrollment, so we were all very close and very good friends. The curriculum was just the basics. There were no electives such as homemaking, FFA, or typing. We had no organized athletic program and no newspaper or annual. I graduated from Dive Ball High School in 1930.
You walked 3 miles to school. What did you do when the weather was bad?
When the weather was bad, we just walked. And sometimes we wouldn't have sufficient cloaks or umbrellas or boots or whatever it takes to protect you from the rain or snow. I know that there was one time that I can remember that I had snow in my hair when I got home from school. The roads were very muddy, and we had to pick our spots when it rained. Sometimes we'd walk near the fence so we could hold on to the fence. We didn't miss very many days of school. Our parents saw that we went.
Would you tell something about your college life?
I'd always wanted to be a teacher. But I didn't think it was possible for me to go to college when the time came. During my senior year, a representative from Lundmars College at Jacksonville came to our home and talked to my father. And to my surprise, he made arrangements for me to attend college in September. Jacksonville seemed as far away as New York does today, and I was miserably homesick. I was inexperienced, and I didn't know how to study, so I burned midnight oil getting my work done. Lundmars was good for me, as it is for other youngsters. The discipline there was very strict. Girls could have dates in the dorm parlor only. They could go to town in groups of three. They could go hiking in groups of five. And they could go to the movies in groups of three. Even with your boyfriend, you had to carry a girl along. I lived in Smith Hall, which was a cooperative home where girls could help pay room and board by waiting tables, clearing tables, and washing dishes. We were real proud of Smith Hall. It was just one big family. The next year, I transferred to SFA at Nacogdoches because it was a less expensive school. I attended SFA 1 year, and at that time, 1933, you could get a temporary teaching certificate, so I began to look for a teaching job. This was a very traumatic experience. During the Depression, the schools had no money. Everyone was unemployed and people were starving. I walked over plowed fields talking to school trustees, and all to no avail.
Miss Pullen, is Lundmars a junior college?
Yes, it is, and that was just exactly what I needed. It was small enough, and I was so inexperienced and so unused to being away from home.
Did you stay in the dorm? And that's a FUD?
No, not really a dorm. It was at various times I stayed at cooperative homes that was designed for keeping 16 or 18 girls. And many times I would be in the home where you had kitchen privileges and you did your own cooking.
Did you ever commute?
No, not during the time that I got my first degree. I commuted later when I took my master's degree.
What was your first teaching job?
Actually, my first teaching job was a government job. President Roosevelt, during the Depression, initiated a number of programs to give employment to the millions of unemployed people. And I taught an adult literacy class at night for 3 months. I believe it was 3 months. It was called WPA, which means Works Progress Administration. There were 12 adults in the class who couldn't read or write. At this same time, many young men joined the CCC, which meant Civilian Conservation Corps, and this was another one of Roosevelt's programs. These young men planted the trees that we see today.
What do you remember the most about the Depression?
I remember so well that food was rationed. We had to have stamps, food stamps, ration stamps, to buy coffee and sugar and some other products. And I remember that but the children in many families were underfed. Now the farmers fared very well because they could raise their own food at home. It was so amazing at certain times during the Depression that the one family would kill a beef, and they would put it various cuts of beef on the wagon, and they'd go down next door to their next door neighbor, which would be miles away, and they would give them a piece of meat and go on to the next one and give a piece of meat. They did this weekly or every 2 weeks. And then that afforded everybody to have some beef. Now, they didn't have any refrigeration, so that was one way that they did not have to save or cure the beef. And another thing that they did was to can a whole beef. Now, there would be two families, usually, that killed a beef, and they would spend all day putting it in cans. But back to my teaching, my real first classroom teaching began at Concord near Zavala in 1934. This was a four-teacher school with grades 1 through 9. I taught second, third, and fourth grades. The school was poor, as was everyone at this time. There were no supplies and hardly enough textbooks and no library books. There were still these outdoor restrooms, and we drew water from a cistern and drank from a bucket. The room was heated by a big pot-bellied wood stove. The teacher had to build the fires and the children bring in the wood. We had no playground equipment, and we had had our school programs in a nearby church that had a stage. The children were eager to learn, however, and school was the greatest thing in their lives. They just adored the teacher. My salary was $70 a month, and sometimes this was by voucher. Teachers were required to ride the two Model A buses to keep discipline. The roads were long and bumpy. I remember when W. Lee O'Daniel was inaugurated as governor of Texas, we carried some students on one of the Model A buses to Austin. Imagine, from Zavala to Austin. It was there that I took my first airplane ride, just over Austin. When we were returning, the bus broke down, but our driver was a mechanic, so he got it fixed. Imagine a busload of noisy, tired, and sleepy kids.
What could you do with a salary of $70?
Well, $70 was like $170 or more that we have today. I didn't drive a car. I didn't have to have a lot of fine clothes. I paid $20 a month for board and room. So really, I didn't have too many expenses.
I understand you taught in Dimebaugh High School.
Yes, I went back to college and got my degree and got a job at Dimebaugh High School. Mr. Pate was the superintendent, and I taught English to all classes except the freshmen. I was the senior sponsor. I sponsored the paper, the annual, and all of the senior activities, including chaperoning the senior trips. I also taught two Spanish classes, and I sponsored the Spanish club. I taught high school 6 years.
How could you do all of those things?
Well, my husband was in the Air Force at that time, and I didn't have any home responsibilities, and I was young and enthusiastic, and we did some of the work that had to be done on the newspaper and the annual at night, when I had such a cooperative group of seniors that worked on these things. Bob Bowman was one of them, and we would meet at the school or at somebody's house and work out all these things. Now, sponsoring the senior trips was not that good. It was quite a bit of responsibility, but we had good children at those times, and their discipline problems were not there. You had no worries about that. I look back on my high school teaching as one of the greatest parts of my life because of the attitude of the students. They loved me with a passion, and when they had an activity, I could not miss. I remember one time that I had the flu and had gone to bed, and they were having the Christmas party, and they would not do it without me, so they came in the car and carried me back to the gym where the party was. So if you're young and enthusiastic and don't have very many responsibilities at home, then you can do those things.
Tell about your husband and family.
I married Coy Poland in 1936. He had been in the CCCs and was then working with his father at their sawmill. Coy joined the Air Force in 1942 and served 3 years. In 1945, our son Joe was born. When Joe married in 1964, I re-entered SFA and got my master's degree. Coy and I were married 39 years when he passed away in 1975.
Was getting a master's degree hard?
Well, at my age, I felt like it was going to be terrible. But, and the idea that that you had to maintain an A average, you see, kind of threw me for a loop. But I found the professors were so human and so cooperative and so anxious to help you in every way that you just felt at home. No, it wasn't hard. In fact, I enjoyed it. And I think that the main thing that kept me going was that four of the teachers from Diball were going at the same time. And so we shared our thoughts, so we shared our rides, and we were just like a family. In fact, one of the professors called Miss Rogers and me the Gold Dust Twins. We took the same subjects and we finished at the same time.
What year did you finish?
1966, I believe.
Just how did you teach and go to SFA at the same time?
Well, that was a problem, but we went at night. There was a Tuesday night class, and then there was a Saturday class. So it did not interfere with our teaching. In fact, it enhanced our teaching. The ideas that we got from our master's degree courses, we carried over to our teaching.
How would you compare the schools of today with those when you began teaching? The changes made, and how would you evaluate the teaching profession?
There's not much comparison with the schools when I started teaching and today's schools. For instance, when I began teaching in 1934, this was during the Depression, the schools were poor and hard-pressed to pay teachers. There was no money for supplies and facilities. However, the children were more attentive and motivated. With no television or other things to claim their attentions, school was the greatest thing in their lives, and the teacher was greatly admired. I believe the children of today are better informed than ever before. The problem is the teacher must compete with so much that claims their attention. The curriculum has greatly improved, and there is much in educational material such as computers and audiovisual materials. The students of today seem to lack discipline, and they have no respect for the teachers. They seem to lack a goal in life, and they have no desire to learn. Also, they seem to think school is all fun and games. And many parents today don't cooperate with the teachers in many instances. Today, the opportunity is great with all the modern equipment. How do I evaluate the profession? Next to preaching, I think it's the greatest. You don't make much money, but there's some kind of satisfaction in it. And surely one has to be dedicated. The salaries are coming to their own, too.
What about the changes brought about by integration?
Well, this was a big deal. I think it was just as frustrating for the blacks as it was the whites. They were not used to being with white people that much, and white people were not used to being with them that much. So there had to be an adjustment made there in order for them to cooperate in classwork or in the classroom. And it took a while. for that adjustment to take place. Now, we received some very good students that were blacks, and certainly good athletes, which enhanced our school, added to it greatly. Integration, I think, took place in about 1967.
Have you experienced good support from the administration?
Oh, yes. I've often said that I never had a bad principal, and I certainly never had a bad superintendent. I've had the greatest interrelationship with the administration. We've always had conscientious school board members and conscientious administration who is ready to help and always to empathize with the problems that you had.
You lived in Diboll most of your life, haven't you? What changes in the city of Diboll have you seen?
Oh, yes, I've lived in Diboll except one teaching job and then the college years. That